My dad was born in 1880, I think. My mother was born in 1891. They met and married in Canada. And then they came down to Spokane Valley and we lived there for, well, I was born in Marcus, Washington, which is up by Colville. And then when I was about 3 years old, we moved to the Opportunity area in Spokane, which is between Spokane and Coeur d'Alene. Anyway, I grew up there, went to school, and graduated from high school in at Central Valley. And I didn't go to college because my dad had died when I was about 6 years old. My mother was having a hard time. I was the youngest of six, so I was the last one at home, and sort of had to help carry the family, I mean, my mom and I. So anyway, I started working at my first job was, well, I went to business school for a little while, and my first job was with Monroe Dairy Machinery, and I worked there until I went with Kaiser Aluminum, and I worked there in all of the departments. I started out in employment, and then they used me as a vacation relief on all of the other places, and I happened to be in the switch on the switchboard in teletype when I got a call or teletype from my brother who had gone to Alaska, saying that Pacific Northern Airlines was hiring, and because everybody knew that I wanted to travel all the time, so. My supervisor, I went to him and showed him because he was always in my ballpark and wanting to help me travel and so on. And so he said, "I will, you book a flight on to Seattle, and then I will call you in sick on Monday." So I did, and I went over, interviewed, and got the job. So then I went to Seattle, and that was in 1954. And I went to Seattle and went through training, which was about 6 weeks. And then I had to fly as junior stewardess for another six weeks or three or yeah, I think it was about 6 weeks. Anyway, one of my first flights to Anchorage, and at that time, PNA had the DC-3s and the DC-4, and it was shortly after that that they got the Constellations, the Connies. So I was flying out of Boeing on the DC-4 to Alaska, and which is was a long flight at that time. And one of my first trips was to Anchorage, and on the sitting in the back all by himself with this nice little old man. And so I went back, and at that time we had time to sit down and talk to the passengers and so on after we'd served and so. And I was talking to him, and he was telling me how he lived in this big house in Juneau all by himself. And I was feeling so sorry for him, and I went up and talked to my senior stewardess, and I said, "Oh, he says he lives in this big old house in Juneau all by himself." And she said, "Ellen, that's Governor Heintzelman." That was my acquaintance with Governor Heinzelman. Our trips then were, we took a lot of fishermen out to, I would take them to Anchorage on my flights, and then they would go on the DC-3 to places like King Salmon and Kodiak and things like that. But anyway, I flew that for a while, and then they needed another stewardess in Anchorage. And because I was the newest hire, low man on the totem pole, they had me go to Anchorage. It was supposed to be for a month. And I remember my first inauguration flight, or senior steward, she took me out on a familiarization trip, and it was into Iliamna, one of them, and of course it was in the November, and it was cold, and it was dark, getting dark early, and so on, and here the plane was met by a man with a dog team and a dog sled. And I thought, wow, I really, really landed in Alaska now. So that was my introduction to Anchorage, to Alaska. And well, come to think of it, I think that was not in November, it was more like April, yeah, because in Anchorage you were getting the breakup, which is a terrible mess. Breakup time in Anchorage in those days was really, because there weren't a lot of paved streets and so on in 54, 55, I guess it was. And anyway, we had a... I flew then from Anchorage to Kenai, Homer, Kodiak, King Salmon, and it was kind of rough at the time because we were on the DC-3s, and in the wintertime we didn't have heat when the plane was on the ground, and in the summertime, the bugs were so bad that we'd have to spray the doors before we had them open because the little no-see-ums and the mosquitoes and whatever there was out there, and they would bite. I mean, they were terrible. So, But my brother had a little house in Spinard, and so I stayed with him. And he was also a volunteer fireman with the Spinard Fire Department. And so I got to know all of the firemen. And they were like big brothers, because he said, my little sister's coming to Anchorage. So. And from then on, I mean, it was great, because if I wanted to go to a movie, I'd just call the fire department and say, who's going to take me to a movie? Or it was just a lot of fun. And then they asked me if I would stay the second month, and I said okay. Well, after the second month, you couldn't have pried me out of Alaska. It was just, I had fallen in love with it, and it was great. The people around that time, I mean, at that time we didn't have to lock our doors, and everybody seemed to, I mean, it was just one big happy family kind of thing, that particularly with the airlines, and we would all go out together and everything. It was wonderful fun. Um, anyway, I find that one of my girlfriends decided that she didn't have a roommate and I didn't either. I was staying with my brother, so we decided to get an apartment together. And then we went to, we flew together and decided we both wanted to travel. So you could get passes on the airlines at that time. So the first time we had a chance and saved our money, we went to Europe, which was a lot of fun. And we went to 28 countries in 2 weeks, I think. So there were 28, not countries, but cities. I mean, that was my first trip to Europe then. And where did we go from there? Another thing that was really a lot of fun was we had the PNA credit union, and it was done at work with volunteers. And so if you volunteers, your pay was 4 parties a year. It was very well worth it. It was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. And
can you describe a party?
Describe what?
Describe one of the parties.
Oh, sure. What we would do, we would go to somebody's house first for cocktails. And then at that time in Anchorage, they had the country club, which was eventually Atwoods bought it. It was the only golf course in Anchorage. And they had a country club where you'd have dinner and dance and so on. And I don't know if I should tell this or not. You can edit it. When we were at the cocktail party, I had I just said I wanted a martini. I didn't realize that because I wasn't much of a drinker, but I didn't realize that there were gin martinis and vodka martinis. Well, I had a vodka martini at the cocktail party, and when we went to dinner, I said, well, I had a martini, so I'll just have another one. Well, this one was a gin, and I guess they didn't mix. But for 20 minutes, I had more fun than anybody. That was great. And I had just met my husband-to-be at the time, and this was one of our first dates, I think. And I was wearing pearls, and my pearls broke. For months afterwards, he'd find pearls in his pocket. And but we had, it was a lot of fun. Well, and then another thing that came out of one of the parties was we had some Native people that were on the ram crew. And so when it came time to dance and so on, they asked a couple of girls to dance and they wouldn't do it. So they asked me and I said, okay. They taught me the Eskimo dance where you go, oh, ho, ho, ho. So ever after that, when I was going on a flight and they were on the ram crew, well, they'd say, Ellen, we know. We'd do the Eskimo dance on the way out to the airplane. We had a lot of fun. It was just a wonderful time. And I don't know where to go from here.
Well, describe a flight. The process of a flight.
Okay.
From when the passengers arrived, even preparing for the passengers.
Yeah.
To landing.
Well, you went to dispatch and checked in, and got our manifest and so on, and then we went out and made sure that all of the food was on the plane. And at that time, we just served sandwiches and coffee, pretty much. And then we greeted the passengers and brought them on the DC-3. I think there was 27 or 28 seats, something like that. And then we'd get everybody buckled in and made sure. And then I'd go sit down. And once we're in flight, then I would get up and serve the passengers, ask them what they wanted and so on. And we were able to, because they were prop planes and not going 90 miles an hour, we were able to talk to the people and so on. But we had one flight. Oh, well, we had one airplane. It was called 319, and it was our cargo DC-3. And it had the big cargo doors on the side, and they leaked. I mean, they were not nice and tight, so it got so cold. And I went to serve the passengers, and the galley was in the rear. And went to serve the passengers, and even the pickles in the sandwiches were frozen. it was awful. So I went up, and we always had take the pilot's coffee too. And I went up, and they said, we didn't have a full load. And he said, get everybody all in with their blankets and everything. So I got them all nice and warm and them. And then the only heat that was coming out was right under the pilot's feet, and my feet at that time, because Mr. Woodley did not think we needed to wear, let's say, decent clothes to keep warm. So he said, come on up. And so I went up, and I sat on the pilot's lap and put my feet right at where the heat was coming out to get my feet warm. And just about that time, we hit some turbulence and the door flew open. All the passengers were right here. Here I was sitting on the pilot's lap. I don't think I ever lived that one down, but I was only trying to get warm. that was fun. And when we would start, we did a lot of charter flights too, and we went up to Aniak. I got to go she fishing. And in Aniak, and we had the naval base was in Kodiak at the time instead of, and now it's Coast Guard, but at that time it was the Navy base. And we had a charter of all the Navy wives, and there was one woman from Kodiak, who everybody knew. I mean, and she and her husband owned a bar in Nome, I think in Kotzebue or Unalakleet. I think it was Kotzebue. Anyway, we went to all those places, and so she was well known. And every place she'd go, somebody would buy her a drink, and she was really in her cups. And I remember going beachcombing with her in Unalakleet, I think it was. Yeah, and I'd have to pick up things for her because she had such a terrible headache, she couldn't bend down to pick up anything. But, and we got to know everybody when you're flying in and out, like a Kodiak and so on. But there was another thing I learned. There was one fellow in Kodiak, because in Alaska, particularly during the winters when they're so long and you have all of the, well, people get cabin fever is what they called it, and everything, and people would swap wives and everything. And so I was on a flight to Kodiak, and I had this gentleman on with his wife, and she had a little dog and had all kinds of jewelry on the dog and a little coat and everything. And then I didn't see them again for several months. And I went in and I picked them. It was the same gentleman, because he had a wife with him, with a little dog. So then I started talking to her. It wasn't his wife that I had on the first flight. This was a new one. And you learned after that that you made sure which wife it was before you started talking to them. It was, when we got the Connies, that was really, they were really nice. I think it's one of the prettiest airplanes with the three tails and we got to fly those. And then I'd fly down to, Juneau. Oh, and another thing, when we were flying out of Anchorage to Kenai, Comer, and so on, we'd usually have two flights a day where we would like go to Kenai and back, and then maybe go to Kodiak and back or whatever. And another thing, we had the DC-3 and the DC-4, and then we had the Connie. Our competition was Northwest, and they had the big airplanes and the, so we had a lot of esprit de corps with our airline and the people that were flying and so on, and we made it up in hospitality for the people on flight and made sure that they were comfortable and so on. And then another time I was flying to Yakutat. It was Yakutat that we stopped. We were going to, it would go Anchorage, Yakutat, Cordova, and Juneau. And we picked up these people in Yakutat, and they looked like they had just spent their last dollar on their flight, but they're really, really nice people and everything. And we had already fed all of our passengers out of Anchorage. So I asked him, I said, are you really? Oh, yes, they were really hungry. So I had some leftovers and I made up trays for both of them and took it back. And I was feeling so sorry for him because I thought they didn't have two nickels to rub together. It turned out that they owned an airline. They owned their own airline. Yeah, that was the Weens. They were really nice people. But then another time we were going into Cordova, supposedly. And the weather was really bad, and it had snowed, and they hadn't had a chance to clear the airport, and it was icy on the runway and everything, so we couldn't land in Cordova. And this man was just furious. And this is one thing that we had to put up with, and that is you were the one they could see and complain to, so you really got complained to for the weather, for a mechanical, no matter, it was always our fault. Well, he was going on, and I explained to him, I said, well, we can't land because it's the runway's so icy that we could end up in a ditch, or we could, you know. That didn't make any difference to him, and he was going on and on and on. So finally I started to laugh, and he said, it's not funny. And I said, well, no, it's not funny, but it is, in one way it is, because you're putting me in the same category as Jesus Christ himself. And he said, oh, I am so sorry. He was just, he said, I didn't think about that. You didn't have anything to do with the weather. I said, no, I didn't have anything to do with the weather. But there was things like that. And then there are funny things that with the, remember we had one flight going into Kodiak, and there was a woman on board that was just, it was at night, so it was dark out, and nothing. I sat down with her to try and get her knuckles back to normal. Anyway, and she was just having a terrible time, and I went up to the cockpit, and I was telling the pilots, and I said, I've tried everything, you know, but she's just scared spitless, and it was... Edgerton was one of the pilots on it, and it was either him or Red Dodge, I don't remember which one it was, and they said, well, go back and tell her, show her the lights on either side of the airplane. Well, at the end of, you know, there's the green and the red. And tell her, as long as we're between those two lights, everything's going to be okay. And I said, you got to be kidding. So I did, and she was fine. She was fine for the rest of the trip because she kept us right between those two. And then another trip we had, it was my first trip on the Connie. And the window, one of the windows cracked. Well, of course, that's what we were really to watch for, because the pressure, you know. So I ran up and told the pilots, and then they had to descend to get, so we weren't pressurized again, because that could have, if the window had blown. But I wasn't really worried, because the man that was sitting in the seat, and it could never have gone through the window. It was quite portly. But, and then on another trip, that was Don Edgerton, I think it was. But anyway, he, we were on the DC-4, and they have boots along the wings for de-icing. They pump them with air, and then it pops the ice off of the wing. And one of the passengers stopped me and said, go tell the pilot there's a bubble in the boot out there. And I didn't think that there was anything to worry about, but I did go up and tell the pilots. And they said, go back and tell him it's okay. We've got one on the other. There's one on the other wing. It's okay. And he took it. But we had a lot of fun. It was a great, wonderful group of people that I flew with. I have to say that. We just They had a wonderful group of people. Oh, and then Mr. Woodley did not want us to wear ski pants or boots, high boots, in the winter. I guess he didn't want people to think it was cold in Alaska or something, but we had to wear nylons and heels, and then those funny little boots the women wore with their heels in the old days. And my girls were, by that time I was chief of the Anchorage girls, and my girls were getting chilblains and everything else. I mean, it was so cold because they were flying the DC-3s into King Salmon, Kodiak, and so on. And so I went into our station manager, and he was wonderful, man, anyway. And I said, you know, we can't do this anymore. And Alaska Airlines had ski pants, wore ski pants, and it was really neat. And I had gone and found ski pants and really nice-looking jackets. They were black with blue little piping around the sleeves and so on. And I told him I could get all of get everybody so we'd be all the same, dressed the same. So he said, well, I'll talk to Seattle. Well, he called. And I was living at that time with my girlfriend, Glenna McAlpine, and she was kind of a character. We had a lot of fun, too. And she and they said, no, they didn't really want us to wear ski pants, but we could dress appropriately. Well, what does that mean? So I borrowed two pair of my brother's long johns, and I cut mine off right at my skirt length, and Glenna pushed hers up underneath her skirt. And then we went into Felix's office and sat down and crossed her legs. Well, Glenna dropped her long johns down, and I, of course, when I sat down, you could see the long johns underneath, which wasn't a pretty sight, by the way. It was maybe a day or so later they told us we could have ski pants. How I met Bob Reeve, that was a good. I was brand new, and I didn't know anything about the airlines in Alaska or anything at that time, because this was one of my first second flight, something like that. And Bob was on flight. And after we got through serving, I went and sat down and was talking to him. And he started telling me stories. And I said, oh, do you own your own airplane? He said, yes. And then he was telling some more stories. And I said, do you own more than one airplane? And he said, yes. And then finally he said, don't you know who I am? And I said, no. He said, I'm Bob Reeve. I said, oh. I had never even heard of him. He said, Revolution Airlines. And I said, oh. Well, ever after that, I'd be walking downtown, and he'd be on the other side of the street, and my main name was Wilson. And he'd go, Wilson! He'd shake his finger at me. Oh, anyway, we had a lot. I mean, this is the way the people were in Alaska at the time. You know, I mean, it was really great. I got to know all of the legislators, and which was wonderful, because then I knew who I was really voting for. And because you had time to talk to them and sit down. And I remember Ralph Rivers explaining to me the difference between a Democrat and a Republican. And, I had Ralph Rivers and Bob Bartlett, Greening, Stepovich, all those people that were our congressmen, and it was great.
What was the difference between a Democrat and a Republican, according to Ralph Rivers?
Well, if I remember properly, he was telling me about the Democrats were for the people. I don't remember exactly how, but I remember him talking about the trickle down and so on. But I don't remember exactly all how he told it. But at that time, some of the Democrats were more Republican than vice versa, you know. So it was really wonderful to be able to talk to them and get their philosophy and what they thought and everything, because some of them were more conservative than they should have been, I guess, for who they were with. But and Governor Egan was just, he was a prince. He was just a wonderful man. And
how did you meet him?
I met him on flight, and then he was my boyfriend at the time, my husband-to-be. He was with the tourism. He was on the board of tourism with him, and got acquainted with him through Dick, plus having him on flight and so on, because he knew Dick and he knew me and everything, he was always giving us a hard time about when we were going to get married, because we dated for about 6 years. He was always giving me a bad time. So Dick had given me my ring, and we were in Kodiak, and here comes Governor Egan out on the tarmac with this other fellow, and they were talking, and as he came up the steps, I just put my hand out and showed him my left hand. He was so excited. He thought that was so great.
He had given you order. He had given you the order beforehand?
No, this was during the just before we were married, the rehearsal dinner. Uh-huh. And one of his aides came running in, and it was at the Westin Hotel, Westward Hotel at the time. And he came running in and jumped up on a table and unrolled this parchment and said, "Hear ye, hear ye." And it was a proclamation from the governor. It has the seal of Alaska and signed by him and the, who's the second one? And saying that for the good of the, good of the morals or something of Alaska, that we were to be married by 8 o'clock on the evening of April 20th, I think.
And were you?
Yep. Yeah. We were. Yeah.
So your time as a flight attendant, were there ever flights that seemed frightening?
I only had a couple. One of them, Well, we had a pilot that, I shouldn't say this, I don't know if you want to edit this out too, because, but he thought he was the greatest pilot, but he had things going on the side that he was working on, and he had been told that you either fly or you do whatever else you're doing. And he took a couple of chances that I think he shouldn't have, but that's just me. But we were going into Kodiak, and the weather was really bad, and that's not an easy runway either, because you're going right into the mountain there. And but we landed, and we were straddling the lights on the side of the runway. That was a little unnerving. And my co-pilot came out, and he said, "Okay, Ellen, it's, a miss is as good as a mile." And I thought, right. But that's really the only time I've really been upset, I think. Because we had wonderful pilots, and our chief pilot always told, from what I understood anyway, always told the pilots that even if the weather was right, everything seemed right, but he had a funny feeling in the seat of his pants, they didn't have to go in. They could turn around and go back, because probably something was wrong that nobody really realized. And knowing that, and knowing the pressure wasn't on the pilots that they had to land, you know, I just always felt very confident, and everything was wonderful. Joe Stevens was our chief pilot, and he was great. He was like a big papa to everybody. And that's really the only time that I can remember that I was ever afraid, a little bit afraid.
How about the passengers? This was a fairly new time for that kind of...
Well, I told you about the the one woman. And we had several during the flight when the passengers would be really nervous and everything, and it's because they hadn't done that much flying. But most Alaskans, I mean, that's the way they traveled, was by air, so... Pretty much. But another thing, I'm so glad that I was able to do what I did. I met so many people of all walks of life. I mean, I had this one fellow on, I don't know what he was doing in Alaska, but got to talking to him, and he said he owned one of the keys, the islands down in off of the coast of Florida, somewhere in there, and he owned the whole thing. And he said, "You're welcome to come anytime, but you have to be married if you come." So I wasn't able to take him up on it. But we met just all people from all walks of life. It was wonderful. And we'd have whole loads of fishermen, half of them drunk. But always there would be two or three on board that would take over and make sure that they behaved themselves, you know, the ones that were kind of in their cups. And at that time, we didn't have a liquor license, and so we couldn't allow anybody to drink on flight, because if we did, the airline could have been fined $1,000, I think it was. We could have been fined $1,000. And so on. So if anybody had a bottle and we could see, well, we would take the bottle and keep it and then give it to them as they got off the airplane. And on this one flight, this little fisherman came up and he said, I know all the people that have the bottles. He said, I'll get them for you. And I said, okay. So he did, and I had this the galley was half full of bottles. And when he went to get off, I went back and I said, you know who these bottles belong to? They didn't have booze in them. They he said, it's okay. We don't want any of them. It's just water or tea. So I don't know if somebody else had bottles or not. But and anyway, but I did have one legislator on flight, or he wanted to be. He was running for office at the time. And he was sitting with this colonel from that was in the Air Force, and he was trying to make a big play with this colonel, and he said, could you bring us 2 glasses of orange juice? And I saw that he had a bottle with him, and I said, I'll bring you the orange juice if you let me take the bottle until you get off the airplane. Absolutely not. And he got really nasty and was going to report me and everything. And I, at that time, we had stationery on the plane. So I went back and got stationery and an envelope. And I told him who he should talk to, who... I said, Art Woodley is our president, or, and I can't remember who the one he should really write to, though, because he would take, gave him the address and everything, and oh, he was just furious. And he started getting really nasty, and I said, Mr., you want to go to Juneau to make laws for me to abide by, and you cannot abide by one of our laws on the airline. I told him, I said, I could be fine, the airline can be fine. Didn't make any difference to him. Well, he lost that election, but he ran again, and he did get in the second time. But he remembered me. Didn't like me at all. That was just rare, you know, something like that. But it was, yeah.